The running time for Rain Hamcast's podcast number 110 is 22 minutes and 22 seconds, with identifications at 9 minutes and 58 seconds, 15 minutes and 17 seconds, and 22 minutes and 22 seconds at the end. Timer resets will occur at 2 minutes and 39 seconds, 5 minutes and 25 seconds, 7 minutes and 56 seconds, 12 minutes and 41 seconds, 18 minutes and 6 seconds, and 20 minutes and 57 seconds. Rain Hamcast podcast number 110 for March 9th, 2024, to follow in 3, 2, 1. For March 9th, 2024, this is Rain Hamcast podcast number 110. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We hope you enjoyed the first part of a truly entertaining after-dinner talk about ham radio we shared with you the last time. It's called Your Code Record is Cracked. It was given during the 1989 Dayton Hamvention Banquet in Dayton, Ohio. The speaker was Dave Bell, W6AQ, a full-time Hollywood producer and director. Dave produced three ham radio videos, A Ham's Wide World, Moving Up to Amateur Radio, and The Original World of a Ham Radio. His movie credits include, among others, Do You Remember Love?, Nadia, and The Long Walk Home, plus some made-for-TV movies. Other television credits include the television series Unsolved Mysteries. Recipient of the Dayton Hamvention 1984 Radio Amateur of the Year, Dave was an inveterate DXer, having operated from Macau, 4U1 ITU in Geneva, Switzerland, and twice from JY1, formerly King Hussein's station in Jordan. As promised, here is part two of Dave Bell's memorable talk, Your Code Record is Cracked.
It was West Main Street, the south side, only a block or so beyond the school, now securely closed and locked for the summer like God intended. What I saw was a gigantic tower, and on top of the tower, strands of aluminum reflecting the morning sun right into my eyes. How could I have missed it? It must have been put up last night. Now, I've never been shy, even when 15 years old. As I gazed at all that shiny metal in the sky, awestruck, it moved for just a moment, but ever so slightly. I rode my bike up the black cinder driveway towards the tower in the backyard. As I got near the back porch, I heard the familiar chant, J9AAI, J9AAI, begin all over again, although this time it was not coming through a small radio speaker, but live. I parked my bike and followed the sound. It was coming from a screened-in back porch. I had no idea who lived there, except it was someone who had utterly and totally captured my radio and was about to capture me, though I didn't know it at the time. I stood at the screen door and looked squarely at the back of a large man doing the mystic chant into a microphone. Beyond him was electronic equipment from floor to ceiling. Every time he spoke, two gigantic tubes, each larger than my entire radio, turned from orange to bright white. When he said, "This is W8 London, Italy Ocean," London caused the tubes to light the room as if it was the inside of a motion picture studio. Italy was a quick, blinding flash, and Ocean was like the sun appearing for a moment between the clouds. The tubes got bright, and the light above his desk got dim at exactly the same time. I didn't understand it, but it was wonderful. When he stopped talking, I heard a voice coming out of his radio. It was small and weak and hard to understand. If I remember correctly, and I may not after all these years, the little voice said, W6AOA, this is J9AAI. And the big fellow said to himself, those damn sixes. And as I stared through the rusted screen, this time he screamed louder, and the inside of the porch seemed brighter than the backyard, which was naked to the noonday sun. I watched as I imagine someone watches a poised snake. I don't know how long I stood there before I knocked at the door, and without turning, the big man said, "Come in," and immediately it went back to his microphone. After he had called again and heard another W6 get the prize, J9AAI, he glanced my direction for a microsecond and said, "Sit down." He waved to a wicker chair that had seen better days. I sat and watched. I looked at all the meters. Some of them bounced when he talked, others dipped slightly, still others moved not at all. Suddenly, in the midst of one of his transmissions, an unearthly squeal filled the room. It sounded like somebody stepped on the tail of a dozen cats all at once. The big man grabbed what looked like an old hammer handle without the hammer and delivered one sharp blow to the top of an olive drab box. The squeal stopped. He turned a dial down about 2 degrees and started calling again. I watched for what may well have been hours. My host never acknowledged my presence beyond the initial greeting. Every now and then he'd say, "Those damn sixes." A couple of times he would say, "Those damn sevens." Then after what seemed an eternity, the little voice came out of the speaker, "W8LIO, this is J9AAI, you're 5x9. And the big man said, "J9AAI, this is W8LIO, you're 5x9 also, QSL." And the little voice said, "QSL, QRZ." And for the first time, I heard what sounded like a swarm of bees that had somehow gotten caught in that speaker. The big man sagged in his chair and then leaned forward and turned a knob that made the room quiet. He looked at a clock on the wall that had too many numbers on it, noted something on a piece of paper in front of him, leaned back, rolled his head toward me. All he said was, "Okinawa." He made it sound like a prayer. Then he said, "That was a bitch, wasn't it?" Not knowing a damn thing about what I had just seen, I said, "Yep." Now, when Gene Shepard talks about ham radio, he often divides hams into what he calls them and us. The them are the guys who run a kilowatt, give or take a couple thousand watts. And the ones he calls us run 100 watts, 80 watts, 50 watts. The us, in other words, are barefoot. W8LIO, whose name turned out to be Jack, was not one of the us. Jack was one of the them. And since Jack became my mentor in ham radio, I quickly became a prospective member of the them. I have never told Gene Shepard. Now, I know the FCC rule that says you aren't supposed to use any more power than necessary, but necessary for what? How are you to know that somebody running 10 kilowatts hasn't just moved in down the block and is going to fire it up? Now, I'm not saying that we thems don't turn off our amplifiers if we're overloading some guy's receiver so bad that he can't understand what we're saying, but I am saying that we would think twice about it before we did it, just in case it was some kind of a trick. I know now how Jack viewed me that first time we met, because I have viewed people who showed up in my shack and gotten hooked in exactly the same way. Jack saw me as raw meat. I was his new beef trust. I got to carry the heavy stuff. I was the guy at the top of the tower. I did all of the stuff for him then that I won't even do for myself now. Jack had this thing about antennas. His good friend Sam Harris, W8UKS, coined the now familiar phrase, "If your antenna didn't blow down last winter, it wasn't big enough." Jack subscribed to that theory completely. One of my first chores as Jack's unpaid boy Friday was to help him put up his famous 33-element beam. Just imagine if your mind will let you do it. A 33-element beam on 10 meters. Somehow, when Jack had gotten out of the Army, he had managed to take a little less than a ton of aluminum with him. I suppose he figured, what the hell, the war was over. What would they need all that money? He also liberated enough coaxial cable to have a remote antenna in Florida if he wanted one. He, of course, lived in northeastern Ohio. He had the original garage you couldn't get your car into. Jack was way ahead of his time.
Time for the FCC-mandated station break. This is Rain Hamcast Podcast number 110 for March 9th, 2024. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Classic Rain from www.therainreport.com.
After Jack finally worked J9 AAI, he said to me, I would have worked that guy first call if I'd had my big beauty up. That was my first introduction to the most often used word in ham radio, if. His big beauty, of course, was a 33-element beam that at that moment was little more than a gleam in his eye and a sag in the garage ceiling where Jack kept all of his aluminum. By the time I got to see him again the following Saturday, his old antenna was down and his tower stood there naked. The backyard was filled with what looks like small tower sections, piles of aluminum elements. When Jack spotted me wheeling my bike up the driveway, he greeted me like a long-lost relative, and a rich relative at that. Little did I know that I was merely a slave returning to the plantation. Jack informed me that I was in time to witness, nay, even help, with one of the most noble efforts ever undertaken by mankind, the erection of the world's largest 10-meter antenna, the aforementioned 33-element beam. Now, one of the early popular TV antennas can still be seen today and used for picking up UHF stations, and that's the square corner. That's what Jack was building, a square corner for 10 meters. Each leg of the square corner had 16 elements on it, and right here in the center was the dipole, about 10 feet or so out from the tower. The driven element is what he called it. However driven that element was, it was no more driven than Jack was, I can assure you. Now, Jack could have made a 51-element beam if he'd wanted to, but somehow the number 33 struck his fancy. It wasn't so many that it couldn't be believed by the true believers, and it wasn't so few that he would discover a bigger antenna in use the first time he went on the air. 33. It had a ring to it. As I remember it, each side of the square corner was a 48-foot aluminum tower section, and the reflector elements were about 3 feet apart. The dipole element sat right straight out from the tower, about 10 feet. All day Saturday, we built that antenna on the ground. When I realized how big the thing was going to be and how heavy it was and who was going to be at the top of the tower, I remembered an appointment I had. It was with my psychiatrist. If only I had, and if only it were, I probably wouldn't be a ham today. The day of the big erection was Sunday. Now, Gene probably has, but Have the rest of you noticed that most impossible antennas get put up on Sunday? I think it's because prayer comes easier. Hams who are fundamentally not religious welcome any little thing that may help. Anyway, I had no idea how Jack and I were going to get that monstrous antenna up the side of the tower. Once we got it there, how the hell would we hook it to the rotator? I mean, the whole thing was going to hang off one side of the tower, you know, and rotate around the top of this thing. I couldn't understand how we were ever going to get it put together. Anyway, it was dark when I got home that night, 2 hours late for dinner, and after my parents' anger and apprehension had subsided, my father asked me what I'd been doing all day. Well, now, how could I explain it to him? I told him I had a new girlfriend. He wanted to know who she was. Since he knew every person in town, who could she be? The trouble with parents is they're a lot like lawyers. They always ask questions they already know the answer to. Or if they don't know the answer, they got a pretty damn good idea what it's going to be. I told my father that the girl was from out of town. Is she a foreigner? He wanted to know. Well, I said, she's from out of town. I don't remember how the conversation ended, but it was clear to me that at some point I would have to tell my parents that the new love of my life was ham radio. While it was somewhat safer than a girlfriend, it certainly wasn't any cheaper. Now, a parenthetical note is that ham radio is also more enduring than most girlfriends. For that matter, it's more enduring than many marriages. Lord knows how many spouses have said in a fit of frustration, "It's either the radio or me." And it turns out to be me. My wife, incidentally, has always had the good sense never to issue the fatal ultimatum. She's described ham radio as what keeps me off the streets, and at other times described it as what keeps me from underfoot, but she has never, ever issued the ultimate ultimatum.
Time for you to make a quick station identification. You're listening to the Radio Amateur Information Network.
Anyway, Sundays came as Sundays do, and I showed up at 8 a.m. as promised, and imagine my surprise when I discovered the backyard of Jack's place full of people. People had driven 60, 70 miles for Jack's big antenna party. If anyone shared my doubt that this thing would get to the top of the tower in one piece, they weren't saying so. These were the grizzled veterans of the antenna wars. They had seen the best of them go up and come down. Jack's plan was to lean the square corner against the tower in exactly the position it would be in when it was hoisted to the top, put all the elements on it before it was leaned against the tower, and just winch it up the side into place. Sometime between 8 p.m. last night and 8 a.m. this morning, Jack had put a big gin pole at the top of the tower. He hooked a rope to the square corner, and up it went. As Jack and I bolted the giant antenna to the rotator, he looked at me and said, "See, David? No hill for a climber. No hill for a climber." One of my favorite phrases was learned at the top of a tower, 60 feet above two dozen hams who would have cricks in their necks that night for looking skyward while two guys in the sky smiled at the thought of 25 stiff necks. Up there in the sky that Sunday morning, I learned a lesson that I've never forgotten. Success is a natural high. Well, the long and the short of it was that Jack's big beauty, our big beauty, was rotating before noon. The beer was broken out and many toasts were drunk to the biggest 10-meter antenna in Ohio. Probably the country. Maybe the world. Definitely the world. The biggest. God, what a work of art. What a wonderful day. All 25 or so hams plus me crowded into Jack's back porch shack for the trial. The rig, of course, was fired up. It always was. The only time Jack's filaments were dark was when Ohio Edison failed. Unfortunately, in Andover, Ohio, that happened with some regularity and was the cause of much cursing. Jack tuned the band and heard, what else, a W6 way out there in the land of fruits and nuts. The W6 was long-winded. What else is new? Several people commented about those damn California kilowatts as they looked at the meter on the old Super Pro. It was up there near the pin, hardly wavering in the golden glow. Jack announced with a solemnity reserved for building dedications and baptisms that his big beauty was pointed at California. He began to rotate the antenna and the S meter began to waver and then slowly back down across the scale. When the ends of the antenna were on California, the W6's voice was nearly lost to the band noise. The signal came up a teeny bit as the antenna rotated further, but when the back of the square corner was on California, it was clear to all in the shack that the Golden State was gone from the long path at last. There was silence from the crowd. "God," said the guy with the gray stubble, "that's what I call a front-to-back." Further tests proved that the front-to-back was indeed phenomenal. There was no way to measure it, of course, but general consensus was that it was in the vicinity of 100 dB, whatever that was. I, of course, did not know what that was, but it was obviously devoutly to be desired, and I shared in their moment of glory. It was a short-lived glory, as it happened, for though Jack worked nearly 100 countries in the next 4 days on 10 meters, ah, yes, the band was known pariah in those days, The following Thursday night, the winds came through Andover, as they did with some regularity. Winds in Andover weren't measured in miles per hour. They were measured in trees down, roofs off, and in the case of the Thursday night wind, 33 element beams down. Jack didn't cry over his loss. In fact, in a curious way, he seemed rather proud that his antenna had not withstood the wind. It was additional proof that it was big enough. It had never been beaten in a pileup. He'd gotten every station on his first call. Jack's Big Beauty had a perfect record. It was the stuff from which legends were made in this romance era of amateur radio. And I am pleased to be a chronicler of the legend of the 33 element square corner, the biggest 10-meter antenna in the world. Now just think, if that code record hadn't been cracked, if I had passed that test, I'd be out pounding brass tonight. I never would have had to learn to write and speak, and you never would have heard about the biggest erection in Ashtabula County. It all goes to show you, doesn't it? When what you get is a broken record, you just have to move on and do the best you can. Or as my oldest son is so fond of saying, when life gives you lemons, make lemonade. Thank you.
That concludes part two of a 1989 Dayton Hamvention banquet address delivered by Dave Bell, W6AQ, called Your Code Record is Cracked. If you missed part one of this talk, you will find it available in the archive section of the RainReport.com. Rain Hamcast number 111 will be published on March 23rd, 2024. Just a reminder that Rain founder Hap Holly, KC9RP, edits and produces this bi-weekly ham radio hamcast without monetization. Your PayPal support and feedback on the RainReport.com are appreciated. Copyright 1985, 2024, Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network. All rights reserved. Very 73 to all of you from Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. Keep on hamming.